We will now move into the question and answer session. I know we have a few questions typed in, but please continue to type them in if you think of them. So, Chris, this one came in during your presentation, so I'm going to put it out to you, but the other presenters are welcome to jump in as well. But the question is, how do we capture the value to the private shipper business entity if the improvement includes a public investment?
I'm not an economist, so that's an interesting question. I'm not sure how you would directly measure that. I know there are models out there that generate some economic value data. The Tredis tool that the EDR resource group has that can develop economic benefits at a regional level from looking at investment in public infrastructure. So as far as I know, you would be looking at tools like that to help answer those questions.
Thank you. Adi, Joseph, or Bruce, any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, this is Adi from Brookings. I mean, I think the most conventional sense here, right, is a user fee base that's direct. This is the example we're seeing with the Miami Port Tunnel, done with what at the time was, I believe, the single largest PPP of its type in the country. I think it's now been exceeded. But that's moving trucks from local delivery routes onto something, more direct for the port, and, they're charging the user base for it. Excuse me. So, it's a combination of public funds with private, but they're able to directly pass on the benefits. There's all kinds of ways, especially we can use intelligent transportation systems and monitoring, and that's why Oregon's such an exciting example because of their advancement on BMT fees. Granted right now for passengers, but the potential with their attitudes to potentially move that to trucking, you can also use that as an opportunity to pass along benefits and the costs that are incurred by them directly.
All right, thank you. Let's see, I'm going to go back up to the top here and see what questions we have. So let's see. Adi and Joseph, a question came in during your presentation. The freight analysis framework data is not enough for planning on a metropolitan region. Do you have any suggestions to use other data sources for it?
Yeah, this is Joe speaking. Yeah, we realized that ourselves, which is actually why we developed our own goods trade database, kind of to get that added granularity that we can't really see through FAST. And I think, in many ways, kind of making those connections to the underlying economic factors in individual regions is important. I think it kind of also coincides with our call that we do need more detailed, more regular updates to the data that we already have on hand, whether that's through FAF or CFS or even a private data source. I mean, I think all different options need to be considered.
All right. And another question for both of you. How would freight funding formulas take into account states that aren't prominent for origin or destination, but through which lots of freight flows?
Yeah, this is Dee. I can take a first stab at that. I think Bruce's presentation kind of provided some really strong visual evidence of how some states really tend to have, that's their role in the national system. I think our counter to it is not in any way about the data quality, but it's really about, what makes a place or a corridor of national significance, and what are we trying to gain from our investments? Our point of view on this is that it's really about looking for inefficiencies in the system. Because frankly, we've already built for, since the interstate era began, a national system of connectivity. So again, what we're looking for now is reliability and efficiency. And predominantly, that's at sites of actual production and consumption, and we would include in that bucket also consolidated warehousing and other logistics activities. So whether that's Riverside in the Inland Empire or Memphis or Louisville, and our database and FAF as well kind of tends to pick up on those trade flows where there's some light value add, but not necessarily local consumption or production of the good. So we actually counter that we think the formula and competitive funding should probably be geared more towards those markets, understanding that, frankly, congestion and bottlenecks are less so in those throughput markets that don't have other origin destination flows. Of course, with the massive caveat that if we have better performance data and understand where bottlenecking and other congestion-related factors may occur at through points. Of course, they should be of national interest as long as they're in a primary corridor.
My comment is that the part of the federal program originally, if you go back to first principles, was to make sure that coordination that crossed state boundaries was done so that state A would not be building a road necessarily to city A, and state B would be building a road to city B, but to make sure that city A and city B had some connectivity over state lines. That's going back to when it was in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And so I think that the federal program has got to recognize that it's almost as if we have to think through, do we make the corridors work? Do we make the networks work? Like, for instance, a state like Arkansas that you know has a tremendous amount of through traffic coming to and from Texas that goes through Arkansas. And there's a lot of overhead traffic in Arkansas. How do we help Arkansas? The question is, do we need to have another interstate bypass through Fayetteville? I mean, if you look at the closure that they had over the White River, and there's other rivers where we've seen bridges, you're having diversion of trucks 300 or 400 miles out of the way when one piece of infrastructure goes out in a rural corridor, which does not have a lot of redundancy in it. So, you know, we need to, maybe the question is not so much focusing on this is the network, but maybe there might be some gaps where we need to look at redundancy in a network or some other, identifying some of the gaps that could help some of these through states manage traffic that may go away from their urban areas or could better facilitate more efficient movements.
All right, thank you. Bruce, a question for you. What is the source of the data behind the slide showing where is it going?
I already answered that. It was all fast stuff.
Okay, so that's freight analysis framework, and the same thing for the source for the ton miles of truck shipments by state for 2002. That all came from freight analysis framework.
Right. I mean, the freight analysis framework's got a lot of data, but you got to have to know how to make it yield in submission to give you the answer you want. It's a 50 shades of gray since everybody's talking about it. 50 shades of data.
I think that's the only time 50 Shades of Grey has been mentioned in relation to freight. But, okay. Next question. Where do we find through freight data for a given state? Bruce, that came up during your presentation.
Well, basically, you're going to have to evaluate what type of information you're looking at for. I mean, if you're in a state that has a tremendous amount of through data, you know, you can look at, you know, the other states and what they have done in their state freight plans. You can look at the FAF. You can look at the Bureau of Economic Analysis. You can do location quotient data that's posted on the Bureau of Census and Bureau of Economic Analysis. So there's a tremendous amount of data that's out there. The problem is it's not necessarily geared in a transportation context. So whatever you do, you're going to have to recognize that there's going to be multipliers. There's going to be additional lifting necessary to take that data and to align it along some type of corridor, some type of geography.
All right. And another question for you, Bruce. What would you suggest as a solution for port concentrations relative to labor disputes?
Well, we see, this is an interesting thing. We've already seen this, and I had a slide, I took it out, but we had a port, the lockout occurred in 2002, and you started seeing shippers already divert cargo to a four-corner strategy. That's, I'm going to Seattle, Tacoma, or Prince Rupert, I'm going to New York, I'm going to the Southeast, I'm going to the Gulf Coast. So basically, shippers already started the process of looking at alternatives. But one of the things that's happening now is as the port strike is occurring and the labor disputes and the congestion of the chassis, at the same, while all this is going on, what people are not really talking about is people aren't talking about really has China peaked. How much more incremental new growth will come out of China versus how much will come out of nearshoring or how much will come out of Southeast Asia? Things that may not move off the West Coast but may move off of an Eastern Coast or a Gulf Coast. So it's interesting that we're talking about that, but firms have started moving away But one of the problems is they've already invested so much in their facilities, even if there's labor shortages, it's still going to take them a while to fully realign their warehousing distribution networks to account for different points of entry and different sources for commodities. So even though we may resolve this labor issue in the next year, it still may be several years, 2 or 3 years, before firms have really relocated the sourcing, really relocated the distribution networks to account for handling multiple activities. And at the same side of the coin, firms are thinking about e-commerce and omni-channel marketing, and how are they going to move from the distribution to the customer. You know, in a sense, the traditional big bulk cargo moving to distribution center being dispersed out, you know, a lot of firms are playing with what does that model look like for the final shipment and final delivery. I mean, where the store can be both an e-retailer and a physical storefront. So I really think that the labor dispute is going to force firms to more fully or more rapidly try to address where do they go forward in this distribution network for retail goods.
All right, thank you. We don't have any more questions typed in at this point. We have a few more minutes left, so feel free to type another question in. But at this point, we'll see if anybody has any questions on the phone. So if the operator can give instructions for asking a question over the phone.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you have a question for the phone, press star one on your telephone keypad. There appears to be no audio questions at this time.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, then I think we will go ahead and end for the day. Thank you to all of our presenters, and thank you for everybody for attending today. The recording, the presentation, and a transcript will be available online within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email once they're available. The next seminar will be held on March 18th and will be about the Maritime Administration Strong Ports Program. Registration is not yet available, but a notice will be sent out through the Freight Planning Listserv announcing registration once it is open. I also want to mention for those of you applying for AICP CM credits, this webinar is now on the AICP calendar, so you should be able to log your credits right after the seminar. Directions for doing so are in the box in the bottom right corner if you need it. And I just want to encourage you to sign up for the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. The listserv is the primary means of sharing information about Talking Freight and registration, as well as other freight topics. So with that, we'll go ahead and end for the day, and thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.